All right. Welcome, everybody, to the second episode of the Columbus ASHRAE podcast. I'm your host, Jay Meyer from Jocko, and I'm here with
Rafi from KFI Engineers.
And our special guest this week is Chris Wicker from Air Control Products. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad you could be here. Yeah, here we both flew in from someplace other than Columbus. Where were you at?
I was in Winnipeg, Canada.
Winnipeg?
Yeah, the factory business.
Okay. What factory?
We were with Price Industries.
Okay.
Yep, that's
sounds
their
like
Canadian head.
All right. Yeah, I was down in Atlanta visiting a BTS in Seasons 4.
Nice.
Down there, so you know we get around.
Great plugs.
Yeah, you gotta get the plugs in while you
for
can.
For sure. Yeah. I've gone on that Winnipeg trip. It is a wonderful trip.
Yeah. You've gone on the BTS trip, too.
I've gone on the BTS trip.
You're giving his plug more priority than my plug?
He's the guest here, all right?
Okay, fair enough. So, so Chris, thank you so much for joining us. And this is our second episode of the ASHRAE podcast. And, you know, our goal is to just kind of continue to expose people to aspects of our industry that they might not hear otherwise. And I think this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, it gives us a chance to show different avenues on how to get into our industry, what those avenues, where the ending point of those avenues are. So, what the journey looks like on that.
I've certainly had one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you start out? Just tell us a little bit about your journey. Like, where'd you start? You don't have to go from when you were born.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of around the time you started.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, Jim Elliott started in 1976.
Yes.
He went to
on a cold December day. 1988.
Yeah. I'm half as old as Jim, so at least be.
So it'll be a little bit quicker.
Half as quick.
Perfect.
I grew up here. Went to Iowa State. Mechanical engineer. Immediately after college, I was actually in the Navy. I was an officer in the nuclear propulsion program. Lived in D.C. for about 8 years. And then my wife and I wanted to come home. You know, we had two kids out there. And so didn't know really what my options were. And my mom actually, she was in the facilities and construction department at Ohio State. And she said, reach out to a couple different firms in the, you know, MEP industry.
Sure.
And, so I did. And that got me started in consulting. So my first exposure to the industry was in consulting.
Wow. Why did you choose to go from the military? Why did you leave the military, I guess?
So I was very specialized. So like my actual job was in nuclear engineering.
Sure.
And not a lot of that in Columbus, Ohio.
Totally.
So I knew I was going to have to make a pretty big career change either way. And if you can't trust your mom, who can you trust? So
very true.
You know, I took her advice and just sort of put some feelers out there, and, you know, gave it a shot. So ended up doing consulting engineering for 6-7 years, two different firms. I was at one firm, you know, like 6 years or so. Left there. I was department manager in the mechanical engineering department for about the last year or so. And then
that was Florida?
No.
Where was that?
No, I was with Prater Engineering.
Okay, so Prater.
Dublin, Ohio.
Yep.
And then I left, got in touch with a company out of Wisconsin, and was starting their field office in Columbus. And I did that for about a year. And through a contact of mine, a good friend of mine, Jason Tracy, he said, you know, I think you'd really like this application engineering role. And your personality is fit for it.
Yeah.
And I turned him down.
Good call.
And, you know, I started thinking about it as time went on. And long story. It was actually, you know, I was working a ton of hours getting the office, the field office started. And it was just a grind. And long story short, my doctor sort of heard, you know, about the hours I was putting in, and he's like, not to overstep, but you might want to consider a new job.
So your heart said something too, right?
So I called Jason back,
right?
And there you go. That was just a great move, because he was right.
What were some of the projects that you were doing that, I mean, took you to that level? Like, until your doctor had to point out, like, Chris, you got to slow down. What was that?
Yeah,
because like, that could happen to anyone in the industry too. Like, I kind of want you to share on that.
Yeah, for sure. So it wasn't so much the projects. It was everything associated with starting an office from not scratch, but
things you don't even think
very early. I was the only employee in the state, and so it was almost like a funded startup, you know. But I had no staff, no immediate, you know, support. You know, all my support was in other states across the country. Wow. And so we were doing a lot of I was doing a lot of you know, project management. They had existing jobs that I was then the project manager or senior engineer on, but I was also, you know, driving to every higher ed institution across the state of Ohio to interview and get jobs and get work and be sustainable.
And that's not just a drive. You need to do background research a little bit to know what you're walking into and where you can actually fit into that design. You know, going through that interview process just to win a project. It's brutal.
Yeah, correct. So it was a lot of on paper failure, you know, interviewing when you do the RFQ process. You know, the universities, they can see exactly how you're staffed, where,
right,
how many people you have. And I think it was probably 0 for 20.
Oof.
And
that could be tough.
Yeah. You know, like the 21st job, probably a $1.5 million design fee. We won it on my last day there.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Like 3.5%, 4%.
True story.
4% rate.
It was really bad. But yeah, so I called Jason back, said, "Hey, I'm ready. Let's do this."
What did you bring from the consulting engineering world over to your role that you're in now?
I think it's a really like firsthand knowledge of the challenges that the consulting engineering profession, you know, has.
Yeah.
If you could back up, define what you do now.
Yeah.
What is your role now?
So right now, my title is a application engineer. And so we represent roughly 30 or so manufacturers exclusively within our three territories. So I'm the application engineer, one of them in our Columbus region. And so we're set up a little bit unique in that I do not do direct sales to contractors. Okay. So my primary focus is engineering support. And as the title suggests, you know, finding the right application for our products and design. So now my clients are consulting engineers, just exactly what I was doing. So
I can 100% attest to that. I will throw Wicker some wild questions sometimes. I'll be like, I need this, this, and this. What can you do? What can't you do? And sometimes he's like, yep, I got you. Contact this person. Other times he's like, you know what? That's not our company. I'd super respect that. Not trying to squeeze into some place that you don't actually fall.
Yeah, no, we can't do that.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's part of the part of the appeal to this position was just that I don't have a direct sales responsibility.
Sure.
I don't like this term, but it's almost like an influencer type position.
So do you have a social credibility media account?
Absolutely not.
You say like and subscribe like we do here at the podcast?
Absolutely not.
It's in the signature. And
this might be my like first and last podcast.
Right.
But having that background is very important in the sense that, you know, my charter is to focus on engineering. The sales, they will work themselves out, sure. Right? So, you know, the philosophy behind that and that business model is, you know, if we're working on problems when they're problems on paper and we get that level of detail right in the design phase, it's going to go better. It should go better for our sales team, right? So that's the business model standpoint is we're not chasing change orders, right? We don't look to make money up on the backside. We want that process to already be thought out and to go smooth. So that's the business focused why behind this role. From a client standpoint, hopefully the projects that we are involved in go smoother on the backside for them as well. Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can definitely see when I'm talking to you, one of the things that I like about your background as far as you having design consulting engineering experience, you were the first one to tell me, you know, hey, don't forget to include this as a schedule note.
Yeah.
For a certain fan, for a certain air device. Hey, you'll get called out on this if you don't do it. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
So just make sure you got that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a big yeah. part of, you know, our right. department is a small department, but you know, we share stories. You know, sometimes we might not get it all specified exactly right. And there is an RFI on a project. Well, we get together on a weekly basis and we share, you know, how are things going? What have we learned this week? What's going on, you know, coming up? And that's part of the opportunity right. that we have is like, hey,
yeah.
we try our best. We try to lay these jobs out perfectly. But here's an instance of where I could have specified it a little bit better, right?
Sure.
And so then we can share that so we know the next time we're selecting that piece of equipment for a client, hey, let's make sure that we draw attention to this. And then not only is it more likely to be purchased that way,
right.
and it'll avoid a change order or an RFI, but it also, the documents, in the sense that they are a communication tool, the documents themselves are that much clearer, such that it makes everybody that's involved in the project from bidding or construction on an equal playing field, right? So
yeah.
that's another part of the...
I got to say another part, too, that this is just a another bowing down to you as wonderful, wonderful human being.
stop.
You've gone through some super intense calculations with me, especially on high plume exhaust fans. You remember, we had to go through, 42 exhaust fans on VA Louisville?
Yeah.
I mean, you having the design consulting engineering experience there, 100% help.
Yeah.
You know, trying to just get that plume height, that discharge velocity was a headache and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Then,
yeah.
But that's part of the other reason why I would not do this position if I was chasing sales. Right? Like the technical side of engineering has to be paramount.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're set up in a way that, you know, our engineering department, it is, I would say, like purposed overhead, you know, very, we want to add value, right? And if adding value to a project is doing something 5-6 times,
right,
40 times, we have to do it, right? But then again, if we're talking about a project that is easily into the six figures, it warrants that type of attention, right? So,
sure.
Yeah, that's sort of why we're set up that way. And we always will be. We're only going to grow, right? So
right.
the ability to be in the weeds and look at things into a level of detail that our clients don't necessarily have the time to, right? They're looking more at the system level. We can dig into the weeds and then provide, you know, a little bit of feedback
sure.
In terms of, you know, things that they might want to consider to, again, make their drawings better on paper so that they're able to be built in a more efficient, economical, you know, manner.
And what's an example of a project that you really took a lot of pride in that, you know, when you think about something you've accomplished in this role, what is that project to you?
Oh, man.
Just tell me about that Texas one.
Texas one.
You're leading the witness.
So
sorry.
Yeah, no, honestly, that's going to take a tremendous amount of thought. Because I see it as a very personal position, right? A lot of engineers, when they talk to you, you know, they're looking at their shoes, you know, they clam up and sure. they're dealing with numbers and figures and stuff. And while like the technical side of what I do is paramount, like the people side of it is right there too. So whether I'm working on a multi-million-dollar facility, biological safety center, weapons facility, or a small restaurant, right? It's all very, very important to whoever is the end user, right?
Right.
You know, just like it's important to somebody working at a vivarium that we get the exhaust and pressurization correctly. Is it not important to the owner of a restaurant that's starting up, you know? So, I mean, there's instances where at restaurants we'll see like fans spinning backwards and it'll show up in a balance report. It doesn't just flat out say, hey, this fan's rotating backwards, or it wouldn't be.
Yeah, right. You'll see a pop-up restaurant.
But we'll go out there and we'll see, you know, characteristics. Right. We'll get that fixed. Wow. It's just a restaurant. But I mean, it's very, very rewarding.
Right.
It's very rewarding.
It's the restaurant to them.
And I think that's one thing, too, that, you know, people getting started in the industry is, you know, they'll say, like, it's just HVAC. Well,
how often are you in a building?
Yeah, it is. What did the pandemic teach us about, you know, air quality and things like that? So what we do is important. I think it's sometimes the pressures of the industry might be able to get to consulting engineers or architects or contractors at some point. And where, you know, pressures of schedule or budget might, you know, really beat people down. But the industry is vitally important.
I mean, it uses 40% of the world's energy.
Right. So I really, not to dodge the question, I can't answer that question. Because every job has a little bit of a important element to it, to somebody.
All right. Then tell me about the Texas job.
I don't even know what he's talking about.
What are you talking about? Did you just say that?
No, I don't.
Tell us about the Oklahoma job.
All right, let's just keep moving around states. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it is
one of the things that's going to stick, and he's going to
work. You know, all over. In a sense, I do like working on projects.
How about that fabric ductwork one?
So
for that big arena,
man, I have so many of them. I mean, we are doing a fabric duct project. You know, right here in town. And it's at an auditorium and it's cool. It's nothing. Again, it's ductwork.
Well, it's not even ductwork though,
but
those fabric ductworks, you got to really think about it completely differently.
Exactly.
The throws, the air distribution, it's a different animal from the design side.
Yeah. So in that case, you know, this particular project, the rewarding aspect of that is, you know, we had it laid out in design, right? It goes to be built, some aspects of the building change, and we have to redesign it. And we did it in the submittal phase, right? So because I have very close relationships with, it's easily over 200 engineers in Central Ohio, you know, we're able to have a seemingly casual call, figure out the need that, you know, this needs to be a coordinated effort with everyone involved. We immediately set up a call, all right? The construction group, they're explaining the technical changes to us. You know, hey, this is what happened to the building. This is why it needed to change. The engineer's saying, all right, well, because of that change, I want to make, you know, really certain that we address you know, certain aspects of the system. Well, I'm on the call. Our manufacturer's on the call. And this thing, just in a couple, you know, conversations, it gets orchestrated. We come up with action items. And it gets ironed out, you know? And so to me, that, again, it's not the testimony of like having some crazy technical prowess. It's quite the opposite. The technical stuff, I think if you get into the senior engineering level, you know that. But being able to process problems and, you know, arrive at solutions in an efficient way is very rewarding to me. Know to be able to see the end product and know how you got there, even though it's not always smooth, that's fun, that's rewarding.
Yeah. How about somebody young coming into the industry that wants your job specifically?
They can't.
What
have
are
it.
Some of the tasks?
Yeah.
What are some of the tasks?
Or just the
things that they should learn?
Yeah.
So, I guess first and foremost, if you're getting into the industry as an engineer, you owe it to yourself to ask questions.
Right.
And that can be, you know, to your senior engineers at your firm or your manufacturer's representative. If your manufacturer's representative is not, you know, technically competent, if he's not responsive, go somewhere else.
Right. Right.
You know, I think that's really the industry, even though we have, you know, BIM tools and we have all these things, I have yet to talk to somebody that says, man, these tools are making our job easier. The challenge is just change, right?
It's just a different...
Still extremely challenging.
Right.
And so, you know, you have to leverage relationships to get 100%. Your design done. So you know, seek out the reps that are efficient, seek out the reps that are, you know, absolutely passionate about getting into the weeds to help you get your drawings that much clearer on paper, you know? Right. So don't be afraid to ask questions. I think is probably the biggest thing. Now for somebody that's looking to get into, you know, like a manufacturer's representative role, you can certainly do that directly out of college. You know, there's ways to do that. I would probably say try to pursue an internship first, you know, before you graduate college to see, is this a right fit for me? Right. So you'll have to learn the technical stuff, and all of that stuff can be taught. It's not rocket science.
Right.
But do you like the people aspect of engineering? You know, some engineers, like I said, would absolutely hate my job. Right.
You gotta be a little bit of a chameleon in that sense, right?
Yeah, yeah. You have to be. You have to like enjoying people. You have to want to work. And, you know, my job is a service industry job. You have to enjoy that. And if you do not enjoy it, do not pursue a manufacturer's rep type role. Now, me personally, I think the best manufacturer's representatives, and there's probably a little bit of bias in here because it's the path that I took. But I think if you are a representative, or if you are a consulting engineer, and then you go into the representative role, you're going to be that much more well suited to know how to serve your clients.
What they actually want.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know what you were looking for, and you know when you wanted it.
Exactly.
And you know how you would respond to you.
Right. And it's so, usually around 9:30 at night on a Tuesday, the day before it's due on Wednesday.
You're the only one that calls me at 9:30 at night.
And you're the only one that answers. I'm just kidding, Jay. You'd answer too.
Absolutely.
Jay answers all the time.
No, but you know, being responsive is a big thing. But when it's your passion and you sort of see the importance of you know, just treating people well, adding value, and wanting to focus on the engineering piece and not have this background idea of like, how is this going to impact a sale or impact a bottom line?
Right.
Like, that is not my focus. In the periphery, yes, we are not a charity.
Sure.
Right. We are a for-profit company, and we serve to, you know, provide a product, represent our manufacturers well, and you know, make sales. Right.
Right.
I got peers for that, and then in. They can focus on that. I want to do the nerd stuff, but do it with sort of a personal flair, I guess.
So, yeah, I think the overarching theme there is that coming from a design consulting background has really not just has led you into a role where you are providing content, or, you know, sorry, not content, providing value to our us design engineers as a client. By being constantly available, because, you know, even when I send you a 1952 fan from some wild place at 9 o'clock at night, I'm like, hey, man, you got any info on this? Like, well, what's going on? That is just as important as when I send you 42 exhaust fans that are high plume, that are all $10,000 each, you know?
Right.
About multi-million-dollar sale versus $10 or whatever, you know, it's silly, right?
Yeah, correct.
It's all because the consulting engineer coming from that background, you know what they wanted.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of the, you know, the reasons why people would choose to, you know, use a manufacturer's representative or, you know, make a decision that is, you know, relative to basis of design, but have that decision be based on, you know, hey, they support me here. They have a good product.
Right.
This is
right.
the decision I make, other than, you know, just sort of the status quo. You know, that's part of the focus, right? I mean, that's like if in my performance reviews, if I'm not, you know, chasing sales dollars, right? That's sort of the metric, right?
Sure.
You know, how are we doing to earn basis of design, but then support that, and, you know, making decisions of, you know, hey, okay, I'm going to, you know, really dive in and help you with one exhaust fan. That is a long-term view, right?
Well,
so I work with anyone in the industry. You know, I'm comfortable, you know, working at the executive level and having conversations with, you know, partners at engineering firms all the way up, you know, president level. I'm equally as passionate about helping, you know, brand new engineers.
How about on that side, what is it that you would tell a brand new engineer not to do? What is it that, in your experience, maybe you've learned from something that you've done that you wouldn't do again?
Yeah, I would say, you know, like if you hear, you know, terms like, hey, you know, this is how we do it or do it this way, question that.
For sure.
And not, that sounds a little bit.
Oh, no.
Don't question it in
policy.
Yeah, yes. don't question it as in like assuming it's wrong. Question it so that you understand when you're putting something on your drawings, it means something.
You didn't press Control C and Control V.
Correct.
Too many times.
Job, yeah.
Yeah. When you're putting something on the drawings, it costs something.
Right. That is a huge thing that you never really realize when you're a young engineer. You're just drawing a line, especially because now everything's digital and you're not taking a pen. Like when I first came in, I know it was digital, but I was still taking a pen, you know. And I came into the tail end of CAD into Revit. So just drawing a line in on a computer screen, you're playing a video game at that point, right?
Right.
You can just restart at the start if you need to.
Yeah.
Well, what you don't realize is that 150-foot refrigerant line to a MRI, that was $150,000.
Yeah.
So,
correct.
It's a huge line.
Yeah. So just question that, and I'd say sort of, you know, learn the technical piece, but. You know, very soon, if you make it, you know, as an engineer, you're going to roll into being, you know, project manager and managing projects. Learn how the industry works.
Learn
how, when problems occur, how do they get fixed?
Well, and also, you know, who are your resources
that
can help you fix that?
Yeah. So, like, you know, having problems on a project shouldn't defeat you.
Correct.
You know, it can throw you off when you're young to think like, man, I have this problem, you know, I did something wrong or, you know, this, that, or that. Yeah, it may have been a mistake or it may have been an omission or there may have been something that you could have specified clear, but like nobody doesn't go through that.
Yeah.
It's very important to learn from, you know, project managers or leaders in firms of like, how do we resolve the issue?
Yeah.
You know, and focus on the resolution of the issue, keep in mind cost and do things, you know, in a cost, you know, respective way.
Right.
But again, that's not the focus. The obligation as an engineer, whether you're a manufacturer's rep or a consulting engineer, is to arrive at the correct technical solution. And that always has to be the priority. The cost and stuff, it'll work itself.
And to give the client what they paid for, the best possible solution.
Correct.
That's the move. Yeah. Sure. And leaning on your reps and your knowledge bases, really, that's how you get it done.
Correct.
And that's through communicating with your reps and getting that repertoire of people you can rely on.
Correct.
Yeah, networking.
Yeah, well, I just want to thank Chris for coming out and spending your time with us tonight.
Certainly. Thanks for having me.
Second official podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah. Anytime. I joke that this might be my first and last one, but we'll see.
Yeah, you're pretty good. I wouldn't like rule that the next opportunity you get.
Yeah,
you know?
No, we'll see. I got a lot of opinions, and somehow I have plenty of experience.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, with that, everybody, we're going to wrap it up, and we're going to head back out to the remainder of our lives until we meet again at the ASHRAE Podcast number 3.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me.